In the heart of a desolate city, shrouded in a perpetual haze of melancholy, lies a place unlike any other. A place where hopes are shattered, dreams are crushed, and despair reigns supreme. Welcome to the Factory of Sadness. Once a symbol of prosperity, this sprawling complex now stands as a monument to the relentless march of time and the cruel hand of fate. Inside these walls, the echoes of broken spirits resonate with haunting clarity. For generations, countless souls have toiled within these confines, their labour fueled by the promise of a better tomorrow. But alas, such promises often prove to be but fleeting illusions dashed upon the unforgiving rocks of reality. Every day, they arrive at the factory, weary and worn, their spirits weighed down by the burden of unfulfilled expectations. They move through the corridors like spectres, their footsteps echoing in the empty spaces, their minds consumed by a pervasive sense of futility. In the shadow of the Factory of Sadness, the world seems to stand still, frozen in a perpetual state of gloom. And yet, amidst the darkness, there lingers a glimmer of hope, a faint whisper of resilience that refuses to be extinguished. For as long as there are dreams to be dashed and hearts to be broken, the Factory of Sadness will endure. A grim testament to the fragile nature of human ambition and the harsh realities of existence. Welcome to the Wizards of Drivel podcast. My name is David Carlshaw, and I'm joined by Matt Swift.
I don't really have anything to add to that. Shall we just call it there?
Yeah. The AI, it's summing up feelings quite well these days.
But how many headers does it go up for though?
All that to come. We're also joined by George, the Weaver Man Weaver.
That they have been calling me that, to be fair, Dave. I was going to cheer as you finished your nice little intro there, because you obviously worked hard and tried to make everything nice for us. So, of course, I'd cheer when you're finished, sarcastically.
I see. I also see what you have done there. So... been a while since the last pod. The last pod was a miserable pod, but then we had the opportunity to do two happy. There were two opportunities to do happy podcasts after a victory over Middlesbrough, in which Lovely Bay scored a lovely goal. The fans cheered until their hearts bled or something, and also an away win at Preston, which was a fun time as well. But no, we can't discuss these nice things. It's shit. It's meant to be shit. And if you don't like it, there's the door. Stoke City 0, Norwich City 3. Good vibes. Just general all-round nice things are happening with Stoke. We're still 19th, so we are no longer in the relegation zone from the last podcast, But, you know, we've not really climbed out of the danger zone yet. George, where did that game specifically go wrong? Was it the linesman steadfastly obeying the rules of the offside? Was it poor setup and tactics from Stephen Schumacher? Was it Tyrese Campbell? Or was it the fact that they were just better than us?
Well, obviously it was Tyrese Campbell, but putting my kind of different hat on, I think this is one that's probably on Schumacher. They were better than us, but I think it was pretty obvious from the first minute that the wing-backs weren't working. They were doubling up wide and just passing around the outside of us. I don't mind that happening sometimes. You can get tactics wrong, that's fine. I think the amount of teams now that have come to the Bet365 and done the exact same thing and just stuck three people down the line in a row and then played around us is a little bit worrying, especially when he came out afterwards and said, I'm not really sure what happened there, because I think it was quite obvious, really. They were better than us, so it's fine. We don't need to win every game. We're not going to win every game, but it was fucking depressing to watch.
Yes, and we get to go into an international break with the good vibes flowing through us. Matt, shall we? I think we'll probably get to the atmosphere discourse at some point. But I think, what do you think our defenders are? Are they human being defenders, or are they just a kind of psyop? There's been several points this season I've not been able to work out if any of the three main centre backs are actually any good, or if it's that they're good at different points, or they're all bad, but they're just bad to differing degrees. And there's some weeks I'll read on the internet, oh, McNally's actually our best defender. He's head and shoulders above Rose. And then it'll be Rose the next week, and they'll be like, oh God, we miss Ben Wilmot. Then I'm just like, oh no, they're actually all bad. What's going on with those men? Who are they?
Who are these men? They're just normal men. They're just incompetent defenders.
Just guilty men.
I think irrespective of what you think of them on an individual basis, and you know, McNally was part of a very decent side last year. Rose was part of a decent team last year and was replaced by McNally, and Wilmot has, you know, been in and out of the team. I know there's some discourse among the fan base about how good or bad he is, but I wouldn't say he's necessarily horrific. But I think what you can say is that when the three of them are together, or two of them are in a partnership, they're pretty shit at working together. And they end up producing a sort of defensive system, or, you know, a partnership or a trio that is really far worse than the sum of its individual parts. Like, how they communicate and work together is really poor. And the first goal just being a prime example of that. There's just players standing all over the place. McNally is just 5 to 10 yards inside his own half, playing everyone on the side. But then there's various points throughout the game where, without it being a goal, where the ball drops to the defender at his feet, and he sort of looks around waiting for someone else to clear it, and then they just sort of stab it away, and it just happens a lot. And they just don't work very well together. I don't think we can highlight all three centre backs for being a bit shit either without highlighting that they've got a fullback whose confidence is really on the floor in Hoover, who wants to get forward but clearly has been told he needs to be more defensively responsible, which isn't his strength at all, really. And then you've got Lyndon Gooch, who probably falls into this bracket that Stoke seem to have, where he's a nice lad, but he's a bit shit. Which I think that sort of typifies a lot of our players, ultimately, and has since relegation. Oh, they're a nice, good lad, good hardworking lad, but they are really shit. Jordan Thompson probably in that bracket as well, apart from the Rangers bit. You know, he's a trier, but he's ultimately not very good at football. I think with the Coon, they are men, but they don't play as a single man. They play as three individuals, yes, as men.
I think they're especially worse when they get exposed as well. I think, like, you mentioned Gooch there and weirdly got applauded off, but I thought he was absolutely appalling defensively. Yeah, the amount of times they just put one pass round him and then it was straight at the back three. I did laugh when you're talking about players not clearing it properly at the one where, was it Rose, I think, who just randomly headed it back into the box for some reason? Oh.
Fuck yeah.
And then we cleared it and he sort of turned around and went, oh, well, you know, what am I meant to do?
Yeah.
Not that, Michael, please. None of them have got any confidence. And as soon as they're exposed, none of them are particularly good at kind of getting it by the scruff of the neck, I think.
And we're daft FC for various reasons, but we had the confidence of two back-to-back wins, back-to-back good performances in which the defence looked pretty solid, and we were not like amazing in either game, but did enough to win and created enough chances to win both games. We were the better team against Preston by quite some distance, I would say. And yes, there's the mitigating circumstance of Berger being out the team, Ben Pearson coming in as the sort of the redemption arc. I'm going to be a hero. I'm not going to get sent off this time, but I am going to get injured in the first 14 minutes, losing the midfield anchor and getting another midfield anchor in the former Jordan Thompson.
They sound like that word.
That's what I was trying to deftly allude to. But alas, alas, we're teetering closer and closer towards the tantalizing Tyrese conversation, people, I assure you. but on the Preston win, like the 3-5-2 was a nice tactical move for that game. We are away from home and they're going to see more of the ball than us. And so that means if we press well and we turn over the ball quickly, we can, you know, use the wing backs to get up the pitch. Lyndon Gooch played a very, very vital role in that Preston game because he was allowed the kind of the security to get up the pitch with the three at the back and Berger holding a little bit. And it was good. But when you're at home and your strategy is counter-attack, and then your opposition, who have faster, quicker, well, fast, same thing, who have faster, better players than you, decide, actually, we're going to do the counter-attack, you sort of need to counter that counter-attack in some way because they're better at counter-attacking than us. So why are we trying to play on the counter-attack? And then we get into Stoke in possession mode, which is just awful to watch and made even more awful to watch in that 3-5-2. Not a vintage day.
No, I think the problem, and it goes back to somewhat sort of, it's very much related to what George said about them being exposed, is this team as a whole has no kind of response to adversity whatsoever in a game. And the moment anything doesn't go through, I mean, we've said this for years. This has been a thing that has been said among the fan base for years, that as soon as something goes wrong, the team can't find a way to react, except in this case now, it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's 16 months since we've scored an equaliser at home. Obviously, you don't want to be scoring equalisers at home every week, but 16 months without scoring an equaliser at home, which was Cardiff in a 2-2 draw, I believe.
So it wasn't the one where we booed them off the pitch for equalising.
No, that was one of Mark, that was one of O'Neill's final games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was a game, I don't want to pick out Jack Bonham because he's been strangely resilient in the past few things, but it was a Jack Bonham special where it was a shot from 20 yards out and it just went in. And it was like, but then we scored 2 goals. Delap scored. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
The miss of time. Anyway, they just have no react. I mean, and it comes from how often we can see goals in like 10-minute periods as well, which we did again today. It was just like, oh, we scored again. Yeah, job done. And obviously, yeah, it's a good segue into is there a contributory element in the attitude of the fan base towards that adversity? I'm sure we can now move on to the conversation that none of us want to have.
Yeah.
but it seems we're going to have it. The woke podcast.
and their insistence in supporting the players. Oh, just that. Right. So, yes, Tyrese Campbell has returned to the fold and started the last two games against Preston and Norwich. And in both cases, he has he's not had an impact on the game. And in both instances, he's been booed off. First, by our loyal and brave away support at Preston, and secondly, by a section of our home fans against Norwich. The same home fans who were encouraged and riled up by Super Johnny Walters to, you know, sing until your heart bleeds or whatever it was. The same fans who would have applauded off players who did not play very well in that game, which was pretty much everyone. But Tyrese Campbell is jeered off the pitch in a way I don't think I've ever seen at Stoke. Like, just in terms of the volume of it and the sort of the sarcastic cheer for the substitution, I'm struggling to really think of a time where there's been that sort of volume for a Stoke City substitution. Now, feel free to tweet in and correct us. I think it's an absolute fucking disgrace. I'm absolutely gobsmacked that literally 2 weeks after we're being told to get behind the lads 100%, we need everything going for us in a relegation battle, that we've just... It, I don't think it would have mattered what Tyrese Campbell did in either of those games. I don't think that makes a blind bit of difference. I think he could score the winner against Hull next week and the same thing would still be being said about him. But the counter argument to that I hear is that he's not really putting a shift in and he's not working hard enough and so therefore this is justified. Okay, fine. We didn't do this to Dwight Gayle or Sam Vokes, nor certainly not to the same extent. But George, why doesn't Tyrese Campbell jump?
Well, I'd like to start by saying that he won three or four headers yesterday. And weirdly enough, sat around me in the booth and end when he won headers, everyone went, oh, wee, fucking hell, he's won one. It kind of gets a bit tiring when you're doing that for the fourth time he's done it in the game. Because at that point, probably you're proving that he does sometimes win headers and it's fine, actually. But I think what you're alluding to there is the reason he doesn't jump up with a 6'5" centre back as what, 5'10" Tyrese Campbell, is the same reason that, or rather, it is kind of explained by what we saw Ennis do a bit later on, when he jumped up for a header, got barged out of the way, thrown to the floor, and they got the ball back really easily. I think what we saw against Preston, actually, where I thought Campbell played pretty well, he created a couple of chances, had a shot that might have been a bit weak, palmed away, but that's fine. Is he backs into players because he's not going to win a header against them. So when he backs into them, he puts them off balance. And when he does that, we win the ball back, which I think I sort of did it at the time. It was out of the five times he lost an aerial duel, so the five times he backed into someone, we had the ball back four of those five times within 5 seconds. And two of those, we won directly the second ball from a player being unbalanced. So again, though, like you say, I mean, I reckon you could say that to every single person in the stadium and it wouldn't actually matter. I kind of turned around to someone at Preston and said very politely, what do you expect him to do? And the response wasn't, I want him to run more, I want him to score goals, I want him to play well. It was, I fucking hate him, mate. I can't stand the bastard. It's nothing to do with football now. People have just decided that emotionally they hate him and that's it.
It's a psychosis. It's yeah. Proper sort of brainworms. Why aren't you tracking back, Campbell? And then when he tracks back, it's why aren't you up the other end of the pitch, Campbell?
Yeah.
But it's just venom at this point. It's just I would have sympathy for it had this, you know, been a sort of recent phenomenon. Had this been a sort of last four or five games this season. It was based on, but Campbell was getting this. He's been getting this his whole Stoke career to a minor extent. But what we just have now is because this team's in a really shit situation. He's just the scapegoat for this team right now. But this is not us saying that Tyrese Campbell's, you know, having a superb season or even played amazingly in either of these last few games. It's just fucking jeering your own player off, and.
Yeah, I thought he was poor yesterday. I thought he didn't get much service, but what he did with it wasn't great. He probably didn't get into good enough positions often enough. But also, like, he's an attacking football player. That happens. I thought Bae Jun-ho was pretty poor yesterday and did exactly the same things. I directly three or four times he didn't track back. Funny enough, he didn't get any response.
I think this is the sort of crux of the issue that I'm not going to sit here and pretend that Tyrese Campbell's had a good season. He hasn't. He hasn't had a good season. And, you know, for large parts of last season, he was struggling. And, you know, ultimately, the player that we did have sort of three or four years ago, who started that season off fantastically, has ironically not recovered from his injury. That is true in this instance. I think the issue with it is there is a level of standard applied to Tyrese Campbell which doesn't apply to other players. Niall Ennis came on and did pretty much exactly what Tyrese Campbell was doing, facing the defenders instead of facing the ball. pressing, just sort of, you know, not that that's a problem in my opinion, because there's no point in one player pressing the ball. Nothing will happen if one player presses the ball. Just doing exactly the same thing. And there was no comment from people around me. And, you know, I understand everyone has opinions on football, and I, you know, that's fine. But I my view of it is there are just unreasonable standards placed upon him. And the threshold for criticism in some cases is through the floor, and the threshold for any kind of praise is just completely unattainable. He can not really do anything on a football pitch right for some people. And I think he'll leave at the end of the season, and that'll be that. He will probably leave as a missed opportunity, I think, for Stoke. I think that's come about partly through bad luck, through his bad injuries. I think it's come about partly because we've had pretty bad managers or managers who are unwilling to sort of cater for his strengths, which is, you know, balls into feet, you know, the high press and fast tempo football. And I think he will leave. I will be sad when he leaves. I know many won't be. But for me, there are many other players who do much worse than him on the pitch who get away with it and get applauded. And again, I don't want to single him out, but every sort of week we play like, okay, I see a tweet about, oh, Jordan Thompson's underrated. He's you know, he always puts effort in. What does that mean? He makes mistakes week in, week out that are equally as bad as anything Campbell does, and he doesn't get called out on it to the same degree. And yeah, it was pretty nasty, I think, at the weekend. And I know people, it could be worse, but it was not nice to hear at the ground.
I think,
it wasn't pleasant, and it can't have been pleasant for him. And yeah, fine, he gets remunerated very well. Who gives a shit? It can't be nice to hear thousands of people sarcastically cheering everything you do, and then you having to sit there on the bench.
It's nasty there, like, sorry, I think when you say like nasty, that's specifically what I've seen from it. I think from the point of like Hoover making a mistake, a player who's very clearly low on confidence, making a mistake that leads to a goal, immediately cheered off the pitch. He hadn't played that badly up until that point. In which game was that? Coventry, maybe?
Yeah.
And it's just, I said this to my dad, I don't really care that we were crap, because we were awful yesterday, and that's fine. That was a bit depressing, but you sit there whilst someone plays an overhit pass, and the response to it is like, it isn't, oh, for God's sake, Stoke, oh, we're so crap, or, oh, this is so frustrating. It's literally like they've just shot everyone's nan in the stadium. It's like Ryan Mai, when he's passed it out of play by accident, has lined up everyone's family and shot them in front of them. It's just so horrible to sit in. Like, I think I said on Twitter that it's been really grim to sit in, and people are responding like, oh, well, you know, what do you expect? Fine, be frustrated. Like, if they booed at the end of that game, I would not have minded at all, because fair enough, they played poorly. I wouldn't have done it myself, because I don't think effort's the problem, but whatever. But it's not booing. It's not we're crap, or it's not, oh, Coates, what are you going to do? It's like, fuck off, Ryan Mai, you shit, I don't want you ever playing again. Fuck off, Campbell, you don't deserve to wear the shirt.
The individualizing of people it's the individual scapegoating for a long-term, much, much deeper problem. Now, of course, you can't, like, you know, have a nuanced argument when you're shouting abuse at someone. You can't say, oh, fucking hell, Campbell, that was shit, but also this is a much more endemic problem within the club, and the Coates family need to take some responsibility, but also there's been a succession of bad managers. And also, I think the tactical setup of this game will let you down a little bit, but to be fair, you should have maybe run for that ball a little bit more. I get that that can't happen, but maybe hold your frustration until half time, full time. You know, by all means, let rip if we've played shite and lost 3-0. That's fine. Yeah, like you said, it's not about like, oh, you know, the woke podcasters say you can't have an opinion these days. Fine, you can have your opinion and you can voice your opinion. I think your opinion, or the way you choose to vent your opinion, is bollocks, and this is why I am saying so. So there we go. And no one will remain convinced, and nothing productive will come of this conversation, gents. I'm sorry to say, but Schumacher has started him two games in a row in the lone striker position. Maybe that tells you something. I don't know what that tells me. If it were up to me, the next game, were we to play one up front, I would pick Ryan Mai, because I think overall he's the best option of those we've got. It's not saying much, but Campbell, low on confidence, out of form, whatever. Niall Ennis, feet like fucking trampolines, shite. Sorry, I should get behind the team. I should apply my own standards to myself. He was shite yesterday, but he did do a good tackle against Preston. So
that was my favourite one. 10 minutes after, he just ran into the keeper for no reason because he lost where his own feet were. It was, oh, unlucky lad. For fuck's sake.
He's probably just not been here long enough to come full circle on it, probably. I would just point out, just regarding Tyrese Campbell and Stoke City strikers, that he's not in a narrow bracket when it comes to this club absolutely ruining strikers. And there is probably a conversation that needs to be held about what happens to our strikers when they are here and what happens, you know, when they leave and what, you know, how they develop from there.
Who is the best striker we've had in the Championship? This could be a very short conversation.
Brown has got the highest.
It's Brownie. Of course it is.
Afobe's to be fair. I think. Did he get quite a few under Rowett and Jones?
I think
potentially,
it got like 10, 8 to 10, I think. But
and then he got booed off at halftime.
Well, yeah.
It's like there's a pattern here in some sense.
Yeah. Brown's a good example, because he sort of like a lot of people like perceive Jacob Brown with lots of effort, and that is true, but also Jacob Brown could be abominably crap, like in terms of making mistakes, and he could also, you know, not he wouldn't always chase a ball or anything like that. And I think fundamentally that, I don't know whether this is specific to Stoke or just sort of English football in general, I do feel that there is just sort of a bias in English football towards combative central defensive midfielders compared to strikers, in as much as players playing in the middle of the park will just see a lot of the ball more and will therefore be perceived as doing more, when what they may do may not actually be that constructive. Yeah. Whereas a striker who is hung out to dry, like a good example is Nathan Lowe against Coventry. Lowe played against Coventry, and there was lots of discourse about Lowe's not, he's not ready and all this type of shit. Like, all right, fair, he might not be ready, but what the hell do you expect him to do in that game? He was playing in a team which had Ben Pearson as its wide left outlet at several points.
Oh, God.
What is he meant to do in that game, other than just throw himself about a bit, which he did? And then he might not be good enough, but you will never know in that circumstance. And I feel there's a lot of players in this team with attacking talent who, until the defence and the team organisation and the manager sorts out what it wants to be, you will never see the best of these players. And then they will go away, like Alfie Doughty, for example, and they will flourish because they'll be in a team.
Billie Jean.
Exactly. You know, called like a show pony and all this type. He's too flash. He's a luxury player. No, he's just a player who's full of confidence, playing in a team that's playing well. And I think that speaks for a lot of our players. I think until they sort that out, you won't see the best of these players. The environment is shit. And players do not play well in shit environments. So,
I think amongst fans as well, this is going to sound unbelievably arrogant, so have a go at me. I think there is genuinely a fundamental misunderstanding of what a striker should do. And I think that's part of it with Campbell. You watch the Preston game, he held it up pretty well. He pressed when he should have done. It was fine. And there's some kind of understanding of it that they should be involved in every second of every piece of play, and that all players should at all times be doing something. And that's just not what it is at all. And I think that's probably what goes against a lot of people. Brown got away with it because he chase down the keeper sometimes, and that was about it.
I think there's a lot of Pulis hangover thing of we expect strikers to be a Mamadi Sidibe, Ricardo Fuller crossover, or like a Jonathan Walters, and we expect charging around, but also goals. And that's just not anything that we've seen, like Brown to an extent, but even Brown was quite often a wide forward or played on the wing. So yeah, we've not seen a centre forward. Like, you know, Stephen Fletcher had moments, I guess, at the start, but you know, it's very, very slim pickings, and it is what it is, I guess. And that is what Stoke are. We are just what we are.
Just a final point on strikers. What a fantastic way for what a fantastic pathway for Emre Tezgul.
Oh no. Oh, poor Emre.
It's incredible.
He scored, bless him, one of the worst goals I've ever seen, but it was a goal. Yes. It took about three deflections and just looped in. The guy is pure Stoke. I love it.
They all count. Now
they do.
At the Factory of Sadness, there is still a functioning hippo tank. So who are we throwing to the hippo tank? I think we've had enough Tyrese fans discourse. So short of throwing our own fans in the hippo tank, is there anyone else we want to chuck in there? Gavin Ward, for me, just a shit ref. He didn't like cost us the game or anything, but he's just a shit ref, so fuck him.
Everyone else associated with the club?
Yeah.
Just the whole club?
I actually found it quite funny what he did to the booth, and then he did some kind of gesture. I'm not sure what it was, but just Angus Gunn. But I actually found it quite funny. Great. It was... I think it was about 80 minutes in, and at this point I was just kind of laughing through tears about how bad it was, but it was quite funny. But throw him in there.
One of their players went down injured, and the booth and end were booing, and Gunn got up and kind of mouthed, "He's hurt his head, you fucking idiots. Fuck off." And then that was not the right thing to say to the 200 people around me, but it was very funny. And then someone started chanting that he's a nonce. So... Swings and roundabouts,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
You win some, you lose some.
What a club. What a weekend. Right, I think that's it from the Wad Podders for this week. See you after our next disastrous defeat. Thank you very much, George.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you very much, Dave.
See you later,
folks.
Go on, Stoke.